This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight, we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Shope went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I think a random picture zoomed in, and there was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
Another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unusual, the untactful, the unsuccessful.
Boy, I'll say. Johnny and Billy, and we talk about, well, strange topics like UFOs and cryptozoology, including Sasquatch, since we're a Sasquatch hotspot. We talk about near-death, Bill's died a couple times.
Witches
and warlocks and
just magic and
just strange topics.
Psychic phenomenon.
Yeah. I'm still kind of recovering from our George Anderson interview last week.
That was good, wasn't it?
I was trying not to mark out, you know, cause I know you're a fan, I'm a fan. It's like, oh my gosh, he's on the phone right now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I have his number and I can call him anytime, but I don't. You know, you don't want to
bug him.
Betray that trust.
Right.
You know, so anyway, what have you been doing?
Well, you know, I got to meet a lot of our listeners at the Coffee Talk Mug Club at the Grace Harbor Farmers Market.
Wait a minute, we have listeners?
We have one, at least.
Oh, well, that's cool. We wouldn't know. Nobody contacts us or emails us or goes to the website or anything. So.
Well, they came to the Mug Club, and it was the 15th anniversary of the Coffee Talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't know how many people showed up. I didn't count heads, but I would have to guess there were probably a couple of hundred that came through there.
Wow.
During the morning.
Good turnout.
And a lot of Strange Harbor fans, a lot of Coffee Talk fans. It was really exciting. It was very exciting. And I would like to thank you all because I enjoyed talking to everybody and enjoyed just watching everybody have a good time. They served breakfast and cinnamon rolls, and it was all free.
What?
So, yeah, free breakfast.
Nothing in life is free.
Well, of course, you had to come there, so that was the price you paid.
Okay.
And you had to talk to us. So that was another price you had to pay.
Wow, I'm just surprised we have a listener.
We do, at least one, maybe two.
Wow. Hey, we're moving up.
So, yeah, it was fun. It was a really good time, and I was glad to see everybody come out there.
Any of the listeners that you talked to that, you know, listened to this show, any of them share any experiences, any sightings or anything?
Actually, yes, they did.
Really? Anything you can talk about? Or?
Not yet, because we're going to have her on the air.
Oh, nice. Nice. That'll be fun.
So, yes, there was a lady I spoke to, and she agreed to come on the air with us and talk about haunted houses and ghosts and things that experiences she's had personally.
That's fun.
Yeah, so that'll be good. And it was just a good time. It was just nice to meet everybody and talk to everybody.
Have you had any experiences? You haven't had any near death, I hope.
I haven't had any near death experiences lately, thank God. But I did have what I think was a UFO experience.
Really?
Yeah. My wife Shannon and I were, she was outside and in the evening, and she called me and said, come look at this. And I walked out, and I'm thinking, you know, this is just maybe some crazy thing out there. And she says, look up there. And I look up in the sky, and there's three bright red lights lined up. And not like an airplane. I mean, these were spread out. These were big and spread out in line. And we watched them for a long time, and then they just kind of faded away. They didn't take off and go away very quickly, but they just faded out slowly. And there was no cloud cover. There was the sky was fairly clear. And there were three bright red lights. So I tried to think of what they could be. You know, I'm always trying to rationalize what I see so that if I do see something that's unusual or paranormal, you know, it's not just jumping to conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
We watched it. We probably watched it for several minutes before they faded away. And I'm convinced after watching that it was a UFO. And I don't know if all the lights were on one ship or if it was three different ships. The lights were bigger and brighter than the stars, than any star in the sky. And
were they in our atmosphere or were they outside of our atmosphere?
They appeared to be in our atmosphere.
Okay.
In the upper regions of our atmosphere.
Hmm.
So, and they were probably pretty far away from where I was.
And you were at home?
I was at home, yeah, in Ocean Shores. Hmm. And but they were to the north. They were up towards the north and fairly high in the sky. And the lights were unusual. I mean, they were glowing in a different way than airplane lights flash and glow. And again, they were large. I think what I think attracted me the most was the size of these red lights. Like I say, they're bigger than the stars. Bigger than anything I've seen in the sky. I mean, even when you see an airplane far away, you know, the lights are just kind of a twinkle, you know. You see them and you can kind of see it move across the sky. This was the lights were much larger, and they were all lined up. They were in perfect formation.
In a line? Or?
Like in a straight line, yeah. It was kind of a line that went, you know, from bottom to top. And then the line leaned slightly to the right. So it was kind of at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just fascinating to me. And then the top light began to make like some kind of a, it didn't actually flash, but it kind of went on and off a couple of times, and then it just faded away. And then the second light did the same thing, and then the third, and then they were gone. And we haven't seen them again. But this was very exciting to me because I could come up with no other explanation for those lights other than a UFO. So that doesn't mean, I mean, just because it's a UFO doesn't necessarily mean it's alien, but
yeah,
it was unidentified. I probably should have contacted Bill Puckett and let him know. He could have checked it out. I didn't do that. I was so in awe. Mm-hmm. And this is why, you know, we don't have pictures of UFOs and Bigfoot and stuff. I mean, I was so in awe of what I was seeing, it never occurred to me to take a picture of it. It never occurred to me afterwards to call somebody like Bill Puckett and report it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just so struck by this that you know, I wanted to think about it. And so, you know, now I have a better understanding of why we have so little information about UFOs and Bigfoot and such. I think the average person just when they see these unusual things, it doesn't cross their mind to, you know, immediately take a picture or,
yeah,
you know. And I wanted to kind of carry that sensation with me. And so I didn't call anybody or talk to anybody about it. But it would be interesting to see if other people saw it and if there was any kind of explanation for it.
Now, what day was this?
This was, I believe it was last Wednesday.
Okay.
It was either Wednesday or Thursday night.
Okay.
So it was very exciting, very interesting, and I don't believe I've ever seen anything like that before in my life. I mean, I've seen things I thought were UFOs, but they were more likely airplanes. And but this, I mean, this was different from anything I've ever seen in the sky.
Well, speaking of different, our good friend David Ellis of the Olympic Project, he's an audio guy. He's real thorough in his craft. He's really good. He sent me some audio, and I wanted to share it with you. You're going to hear this parabolic microphone. Actually, I'm not even sure if a parabolic was hooked up or not, or if it's just a recorder with its stock microphone on it. We'll get the details from him next week when we talk to him, okay? I'm going to play you the recording and then play the same piece after he has processed it. But visually, it's hard to explain. We look at these audio pieces. We can't trust our ears all the time.
Right.
So we look visually at the spectral analyzation, the spectral graph. This is one of the examples of where the ear maybe didn't hear it, but the eyes caught it.
Yeah.
So here's the original.
Let's hear it.
This is called Great Suspicious Vocal. It's looped 5 times. Okay. Now, I really had to jack it up for you to hear anything. Now, I'm going to play it again just kind of like normal level.
Yeah.
Now, you pretty much just hear crickets and stuff and just environment,
yeah.
Right? Now, here is David Ellis's work after he saw the visual and said, hey, there's something there. Let me play with it. Quite a bit of difference there.
Very, very much. And you get that, you get those vocal tones.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy with no vocal cords, I sometimes study this stuff. But you get those tones that come from developed vocal cords that, you know, similar to human beings.
Now, is that an elk? Is that a deer? Is that a bear? What other possibilities in our woods? This was in Washington, west of the mountains.
I don't know. I've heard elk and deer and bears and
cougars.
Different sounds. I've never heard a sound like that.
Yeah.
We have coyotes. We have quite a few coyotes mm-hmm. in Ocean Shores. And every once in a while, the coyotes howl.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not a coyote howl.
No, it was not. And we have wolves in the Olympics.
That's true. Yes, we do.
They like to deny it, but anyway. So what could that be?
It could be a Bigfoot.
Could be a human.
It could be.
That's identical to a lot of other calls, or whatever you want to call them, that David has gotten in various locations in and out of Washington State where alleged Sasquatch were reported. That's like a common sound. I've heard that sound hundreds of times other places in other recordings. That make sense?
It does. It does. And I know that's kind of David's thing. I mean, he's... and when he says, play with it, all he's trying to do is enhance the original sound.
Yeah.
So it's more audible, so you can hear it better.
Yeah, you want to remove all these other things that might be drowning it.
Right, so that the sound is more pure. So he's not trying to manipulate the sound in any way.
Correct.
Just trying to isolate it.
Yeah, that's a good term, isolation.
Yeah. So, this is quite stunning, really.
Kind of creepy. Can you imagine being out in the woods and then just hearing that?
I think I'd wet myself.
I want to wet myself just listening to the audio. Let's see, anything else going on? Anything?
Last Thursday was solstice.
Oh.
The 21st. And solstice is a rather interesting thing. Say, solstice is the time when we have the sun at, I guess, I don't know what to call it, but it's pretty much at in the summer solstice, the sun is at its highest. So we have longer days. In fact, the solstice is the longest day of the year for daylight.
Mm-hmm.
So after the solstice, after the 21st of June, the days become shorter. And the 21st marks the first day of summer. That day forward, the days get shorter up until the equinox, which is in the fall, signifies the beginning of fall.
See, that's what we've talked about before.
We've talked about the equinoxes, yeah. But there are two equinoxes and two solstices. You have summer solstice, which is approximately June 21st, and it shifts a little.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the winter solstice, which is approximately December 21st. It's said that the pagans celebrated the solstice on the 21st of December, the winter solstice, and that was the basis for the Christmas celebrations.
Now, didn't the pagans like wear their furry goat boots and dance around buckets of blood or something?
Yeah, they made sacrifices, and the druids, it's speculated that Stonehenge was originally built to take full advantage of the solstice, both the summer and winter. That things on the solstice, the stars and the sun line up with the stones. There are other places in the world where the sun... This is in the northern hemisphere, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
In the southern hemisphere, because you have the opposite effect. So in the southern hemisphere, of course, in June, it's wintertime. It's colder. And you have the winter solstice in June and the summer solstice in December, which seems very odd for us, but that becomes very normal for them. But the druids and the pagans always celebrated solstice as a time of good luck and good fortune. And they danced and sang and probably drank spirits. And then on the equinox, we don't celebrate the equinox as much. You know, the equinox marks the periods between the solstices, and it also measures or marks the seasonal change.
Mm-hmm.
So when the autumn equinox comes, that's the beginning of autumn. When the summer solstice comes, that's the beginning of solstice. Winter solstice marks the beginning of winter, officially. On the summer solstice, we have the longest day of daylight in the northern hemisphere. I think it's in Fairbanks, Alaska, on the solstice. The sunset is something like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the sunrise is like 2:25 in the morning.
Mm.
So they get, you know, about an hour and a half of darkness or semi-darkness before it begins to get light again. And every year, I think they still do this, I'm not sure, but I think that every year they play a baseball game very late at night with no lights up there because it stays light for so long that they can go out and play this baseball game. And then everybody that plays in the game gets a little plaque that says that they played in the summer solstice baseball game. So summer solstice is the longest day of the year. Winter solstice is the shortest day, so we have the shortest amount of sunlight in the winter and the longest amount of sunlight in the summer. So if you live in the northern part of the northern hemisphere, it stays light almost 24 hours a day. Here in Washington State, on the solstice, I think it stays light till well after 10 o'clock. And then sunrise comes again around 6 o'clock in the morning or so, I believe. I haven't looked that up, so I can't verify it. But it's an interesting phenomenon because it also changes the way we feel sometimes. People tend to feel better when they're exposed to more sunlight.
Yeah, isn't it vitamin D or B?
Vitamin D, yeah, vitamin D. It gives them a sense of, just a sense of feeling good. It's not quite a, what I would call a euphoria, feeling that good, but it's a sense of well-being. And this is why it is such a celebrated time, because this summer solstice makes you feel better, makes you feel, you know, that there's hope and there's goodness, there's abundance. You know, we have I think sometimes we, because of the greed and the control that have been put on us by corporations and governments, that we tend to think that there's, you know, a shortage of everything. But in reality, there's an abundance of everything. I mean, there's more than enough food in the world to feed everybody. There's more than enough shelter to shelter everybody. You know, there's more than enough health care to take care of everybody. There's more than enough money for all of us, because we tend to be less like the pagans and the druids. We tend to covet those things. They did not covet those things as much as we do, and therefore they did have that abundance. They did have that sense of well-being and comfort. I guess if we want to be like the pagans and the druids, we probably want to think about that. Think about the abundance that exists in this world, and think about celebrating that abundance on those days, on the solstices.
Are you pushing your pagan beliefs on me?
I'm trying, yeah.
I knew it. You know, you'd mentioned Stonehenge, and I'm still disappointed. I'm kind of disgusted with Stonehenge.
Why is that?
Because they moved them. They make you think that those things were set up in that position for centuries and centuries, and they haven't. That's not how they were found. They put them in that position as they thought they should look. Does that make sense? And I posted on our website all the photos. They're like black and white photos. They had cranes out, and they're moving them. And
well, they did, yeah. They did reconstruct it.
Just disappointed.
Well, they reconstructed it. They tried to, you know, not all the stones were standing for all these years. So they did try to reconstruct it. It's possible that they didn't reconstruct it exactly as it was. Man always intervenes in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Stonehenge was man-made. We know that.
Because well, yeah.
The stones didn't come from the area that they're currently in.
Well, who else would make it besides man?
Nature. Nature makes things. Nature is very creative.
Okay, touche. Touche.
But man tends to modify what nature creates.
Oh, yes. Hey, it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Coming up, are aliens visiting the World Cup? We have mysterious UFOs in the night sky over Russia. We'll have that and more coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. I'm Johnny, he's Billy, and we're both strange.
Yes, we are.
The headline I found, are aliens visiting the World Cup? Mysterious UFO in shape of stingray lights up night sky over Russia. Footage has emerged of a giant stingray lighting up the skies where England plays Russia, I guess.
Right, they're playing the World Cup in Russia.
Hold on, my thing crashed.
I don't remember what the name of the city is.
Now, people are suggesting an extraterrestrial phenomenon over Russia. The aliens have arrived to the World Cup, said one. Nizhny Novgorod. That's
good.
That's the place.
I don't think I could have said it better myself.
Is it a rocket, a fireball, or a UFO? Talk to me, comrades. I'm worried, posted Andre. The spectacular footage had another explanation, according to Russian space officials. What do you think? What do you know?
Well, I don't know anything. You know, according to the article, it was a Soyuz 2.1B rocket that was launched from the space center, from the Russian space center. The question is that the, you know, Russian explanation, or was it really a UFO? You know, we always, I think, I don't know why governments feel they have to explain everything, you know, or debunk it, but was it really a Russian rocket, or was it a UFO? Was it something else? I saw the pictures. They're very interesting. And they do look
like a
some kind of rocket, yeah. Yeah, there's a big flare behind it, and then a long tail that tails off from that. The article that I read was not in, you know, a leading from a leading news agency. It was from I think they're it's The Independent. I think they're out of the UK. But you know, when we get reports like this, you know, again, somebody like Bill Puckett could probably give us a better information.
Oh, yeah, because he calls, you know, like, the air traffic controllers in the Air Force and all these other places to see if anything's going on.
He looks at how many people saw this and how many different agencies tracked it. And, you know, it should be, if it was a Russian rocket launch, he should be able to find out pretty easily.
Yeah.
So, rockets. I'm going to tell you, when I was a kid, I grew up in Southern California.
A long time ago.
A long, long time ago, before there was lots of people there. And we lived kind of at the base of the mountains,
mm-hmm.
the San Gabriel Mountains. And on the other side of those mountains, it's all desert.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to do bomb tests and... And I think they may have even done some nuclear tests out there.
Oh, great.
But we would see things sometimes, like rocket trails and things coming out of there. And I always wondered, I mean, they always told us that it was just testing, you know, that they were testing bombs and testing rockets and different things. But I always wondered if it was actually UFOs.
Oh.
And they were just telling us it was something different. Now, I know that part of California, out there in the Mojave Desert,
mm-hmm.
they do get a lot of UFO sightings. So, you know, as a kid, I just kind of bought into the story that it was military testing.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really questioned that
much. You were brainwashed at a young age.
Yeah, but I did think about it. I didn't, you know, I didn't outwardly question it.
Speaking of brainwash, I got to tell you, I talked to a good friend of mine. His name is Ron Dumont. I've known him all my life, ever since I was a little boy, right? His mom and my mom worked at Jack's Restaurant in Everett. Mom was a waitress, and she was a cook. His mom, Val the Pal, right?
Yeah.
Actually, he was the guy that came down here in the late 80s, early 90s when I first moved here. And he was going to bring a new business to Grace Harbor, and all these places that he went, they were like, no, that'll never work here. We're not too interested in this. And, you know, or they put up so much red tape that it would be virtually impossible for him to start this new business here. So he left kind of discouraged.
Yeah.
And now they're all over the place. There are espresso stands. The same spots that he wanted to put the very first espresso stands in Grace Harbor, there are now espresso stands. Ironic. Anyway, with Ronnie, he's an Illuminati guy. He's not a member of the Illuminati, right?
Yeah. The Illuminati has been kind of in the news a lot lately, and in the, I guess, maybe not in the news so much as in movies and TV shows and stuff. Of course, I watch strange movies and strange TV shows, but...
That's a shocker.
I'm a strange guy. But it seems that there's a lot of talk about the Illuminati in recent times. I'm just wondering if this is an organization that's coming back to power. You know, there is speculation that the Illuminati is kind of a, what do they call it, kind of a government, I can't think of the word that they use. It's kind of like a government agency above the government that influences government.
He did this movie. It's called Find Muck, the movie. And this is the description. A dismissive attitude is the opposite of an open mind. This mini-documentary is not to convince you of anything, but rather it's a platform to consider esoteric information for your own study. It is for you to initiate new information that is not readily available to the average person. Secret societies do exist, but how far does the rabbit hole go? I made this documentary because I was tired of people thinking I was crazy. Was 9/11 a Freemasonic Kabbalah ritual of the power elite? Follow me down the rabbit hole with an open mind. Try to find flaws in my theories. When you see the proof, you'll never look at the world the same way again. Quick note, the first part, 15 minutes of the documentary, will set up the rest. Have patience. You will be rewarded with some of the most mind-blowing information that you will ever encounter. The illustrations will make you a believer. Welcome to Find Muck.
Find Muck.
Anyway, I want to have him on the show.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
He encourages anybody to try to find faults, inconsistencies in his documentary. I think if anybody can do it, it's you.
All right. Well, I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch. You know, the more you know, the more you understand, the more you can debunk. What about the Illuminati? Are they possible? Are they real?
Some seem to think so.
I think they are.
But you think they're a good, nice, kind organization, like their website says?
Yeah, I do. I actually think that they are more benevolent, more humane. I don't think that their intention is to control the world, mm-hmm. as some corporate executives would like to do, and some politicians. But
apparently these politicians and corporate executives are members of the Illuminati and high-powered musical artists and Hollywood producers and, like, the elite.
The elite.
The financially elite.
You know, in my life, I've been fortunate enough to meet and know a few celebrities, you know, people that have achieved fame or achieved great wealth. And what I find is that they're really nice people, and that they're... I've met some a-holes, but can I say a-holes?
Yeah, I think so.
For the most part, they're pretty decent people, and they care about humanity. And they utilize their fame and their fortune to do things that are good for people, that help people. You know, they don't give it away. They use it in a way that benefits humanity rather than in a way that detracts from our humane efforts.
We'll have Ronnie in down the road. He lives up in the big city.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll make it down, and I think it'd be cool to have him on the show so he can explain exactly where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Or you can just watch the documentary. I'm pretty sure that explains it all. But then you can ask him questions and...
I don't think there's any way to explain it all in a one-hour documentary.
I think
there's always more to the story. You know, television is a wonderful medium, and we have YouTube, and we have all kinds of things, theater projects and film projects, but they can never tell the whole story. I was once doing a, you know, when you go on television, you have to do kind of a pre-interview with the producers and stuff. And I was going on this TV show, and we were doing our little pre-production meeting and screen test and all that. I asked them, you know, why don't you stay focused on one story and tell the whole story? And they told me, number one, you can never tell the whole story. And number two, television and the media is not about informing you, it's about entertaining you. So we only tell the parts that are entertaining. We only create the stories, or tell the stories. They don't often create the stories. But they tell the stories that are the most entertaining. Now, you know, your friend who did this documentary, you know, he may not be under the same guidelines as most television shows are, but maybe he can tell more of the truth and tell more of the story. But I would like to hear it. Not only I'm going to watch his documentary, but I would like to hear it, you know, from him personally.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of an indication of the validity of a story that's being told, is when you hear it from the person's mouth, when you hear them speak. This is why we have conferences all over the country, and people come speak at these conferences, because we get not only the information from the words, but we get the body language. We get so much more from what people are saying personally than we get from what they create on television or in a video or even on radio. You know, it's one of the things about radio is we have to tell you a story with our words. And sometimes the words escape us and we don't get the right words. So the story suffers for it. But when you're talking with someone in person, you can read their body language. You can see. You can look in their eyes. If you're a fan of neuro-linguistic programming, you can read in a person's facial expressions when they're lying and when they're not.
Hey, what are you looking at, man?
I'm looking at you.
I'm not lying.
No.
No, there really is a guy named Ron.
Yeah.
He's my friend. Known him for a long time.
You have a friend?
He lives in Canada. You wouldn't know him.
I believe you.
I don't think we point this out enough on this show about your background, your clinical background. Wait, clinical? You know,
I was a clinician for 20-plus years and mm-hmm. Worked in the mental health field and worked as a therapist. I worked for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and I also had a private practice where I practiced counseling and psychotherapies and such.
Now, would you be called a shrink? Or
I've been called that, yeah.
Okay. Or a quack?
Just a therapist. You know, we usually use the term therapist, and that includes, you know, all the mental health counseling kind of interventions.
Mm-hmm.
You learn a lot when you talk to people, and you learn a lot about how to read people. Most people that come in for therapy, they don't necessarily tell you the truth. In fact, they really try very hard to avoid telling you the truth, because the truth is painful and the stories are painful. So it's the job of the therapist to figure out when they're not telling the truth, why they're not telling the truth,
mm-hmm.
and then find out what the truth is. So, you know, I've done research projects. I've done a lot of study. I've taught classes all over the country. And then, on top of all of that, I had this near-death experience back in 1969, April 17th, 1969, almost 50 years ago.
Wow.
And I didn't talk about that experience for 20 years. But as soon as I started talking about it, it suddenly became a very hot topic. And I traveled all over the country speaking about it and eventually wrote a book about it. And I've had the opportunity now to speak to people all over the world about this. And when you talk to people, you get feedback. You learn. Every time I speak to a group, I learn. I find out new things. In fact, if you'd like to come hear me speak, I'm going to be speaking at the International Conference for Near-Death Studies, which is going to be held on September 1st, that weekend, at the Bellevue Hilton in Bellevue, Washington. Not Bellevue, New York. So
just in case.
Just in case.
Because we are worldwide.
We are.
We'd
we
hate
are.
For all you know, two listeners to show up to Bellevue, New York and be like, hey, we're yeah. Strange Harbor, the Bill guy, the yeah. near-death dude.
Yeah, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be speaking. I'll be on, actually, in the late afternoon, but you'd have to buy a ticket and if you're coming from further away than you can make a round trip in one day, you're going to have to stay there.
Yeah. If you want to fly in from Bellevue, New York, to Bellevue, Washington, well, to SeaTac, to go to Bellevue, you'd have to, like, stay the night, probably.
But what's interesting, this conference, people come from all over the world. I mean, from everywhere, all over the world, to come to this conference every year. And it's held in a different city every year. And they come to talk about near-death experiences and what they mean and what happens when we have one. And is it just some kind of psychological phenomenon, or is it an actual real-time event? And, you know, my feeling is it's an actual event. It's a real-time event.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me 50 years ago. I've had a couple of other ones. Every single one of these in the last 50 years is extraordinarily vivid in my mind today. I mean, I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday, but I can remember these near-death experiences and exactly what happened. Wow. But I've also had to learn a little about them. I've had to listen to other people. I've had to pay attention.
What?
Yeah, even to Johnny sometimes. But but we have, you know, we as human beings have the ability to learn. You know, people talk about IQ. Intelligence quotient is what an IQ is. And what that means, it doesn't mean that you're smarter than other people. It doesn't mean you have more knowledge than they have if you have a higher IQ. The higher the IQ, the easier it is for you to learn. It just means that your ability to learn new things is greater. But even if you have a very low IQ, you still can learn. You just have to work harder at it than the guy with the higher IQ. So everybody has the ability to learn new things, to gather information and put it together in a reasonable, rational way, and to come to a conclusion about that information. But if we don't go about it in a scientific manner, if we don't gather valid data and analyze valid data, then we come up with invalid results. So we have to study a little. We have to learn what data is valid and what data is not valid. We have to figure out how to put the data, the valid data, together in a way that creates a logical and provable conclusion. We want to be able to prove what we say, what we do. So everybody has the ability to learn. Everybody has the ability to find out these things, to create this. And we all have the ability to separate fact from fiction, but a lot of people don't. And they're easily misled. Even people with high IQs are very easily misled sometimes. So it's not how smart you are. It's not how high your IQ is, it's how much you're willing to take the time to learn the truth and to learn why. I'm always asking people, why? If you tell me something, I want to know why what you say is true. What makes it valid?
Mm-hmm.
And when we question the validity of what people are saying, then we can learn the truth. We can discern the truth from fiction. You know, it's like the flat earth thing.
it's hard to see that. What happened?
I know. I ask people why. I often ask, when I talk to flat earthers, I ask them, why do you believe this? Why do you think this? And they often give me an explanation. It doesn't take much knowledge or science to know that those explanations are not valid. They're not using valid science or valid information. They're using invalid science and invalid information. When we can learn to separate the two, the valid science and the valid information from the invalid science and information, then we can learn the truth. I think, was it last week or a week before we talked about conspiracy that they faked the moon landing? When you look at all the data and you look at the number of people involved, you have to come to the conclusion that it would be virtually impossible to do that. You know, yes, I know, they've explained it by, well, they did it on a movie set and all this, and they can create movies and they can create all these special effects. There's another reality. There were, you know, a million people involved in this. The people that built the rockets, that built the capsules, that built we have the video. We know that the space shuttle exists. We know it exists. We've seen it. You can touch it. I've been to a museum and I've touched the space shuttle. I know it exists.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the space capsules that they went to into the first orbits around Earth in. I know they exist because I've seen them, I've touched them, I've felt them. Now, that doesn't mean that they went around the planet, but I know that those things exist, and I know that it took a large number of people to build it. It took a large number of people to launch the rockets and to do all the work and to track it. So, trying to get that many people to tell a lie... It's extraordinarily difficult because those people have integrity. They don't lie. It's not in their nature to lie to people. This is why conspiracy theories get debunked so easily. It's because most people have integrity, except for politicians.
Easy.
So, Johnny has integrity. He just doesn't know it yet. Anyway, that's our show for today. So... hopefully you'll contact us. Again, thanks for coming out and talking to me at the Coffee Talk 15th anniversary at the Grays Harbor Farmers Market. That was just a joy to talk to some of our listeners. And I hope that you're all doing well out there and staying strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at StrangeHarbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.